Welcome back to Hype Podcast. This is Hypeable.com's flagship show where we bring you all the latest news in entertainment and pop culture every week. My name is Pamela and I'll be your host today for episode 164. Selena is off this week. She's a little bit sick and I was a little bit otherwise detained last week. I don't know if you guys keep up with the news, like the international news, depending on where you're from, or like the national news, but there's been a huge amount of wildfires out in Northern California, and they just happen to be very close to where my family lives. So we're sorry we missed last week, but we're here and we're back with a really fun episode. And because Selena is not here, I have two super awesome ladies from Hypeable staff that have graciously agreed to help me out with the show. We have Kendra here and we have Laura. Do you guys want to like introduce yourselves and tell everybody a little bit about what you do for Hypeable and things like that?
Sure. Yeah, I'm Kendra. I live in Canada and I, for Hypeable, I'm currently covering How to Get Away with Murder and This Is Us and a little bit of book stuff, and I'm still obsessed with The Vampire Diaries, so anytime I can work that in, I will.
And I'm Laura. I cover Outlander, Doctor Who, Timeless, when it'll be coming back, and kind of a little bit of anything BBC, ITV that pops over onto Hypeable I seem to take care of. And I'm recently now living in Philly. I was originally from New York, now I'm in Philly, so yeah, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, you've been so busy this summer. Like, we totally missed you because of all the Outlander stuff that started coming up here and there and everywhere. So we're happy you're back for sure.
Yeah, I'm happy to be back too. It was a long hiatus as my life was nothing but boxes.
Yeah, but, and also, by the way, because like we have people that ask us about this. Like, Laura used to host Who Hype, which I know a lot of you are still invested in, even though they haven't put out an episode in a while, but you're very beloved, just in case you didn't know.
I had no idea. Oh my gosh.
There you go. So we're going to kick things off, as always, with our signature How We Hype segment. As you guys know, this is kind of the part where we tell you what we've been enjoying or doing in pop culture. And I'm going to have Kendra kick this off because she's got a really timely recommendation.
Cool. Yeah. So last week I read Turtles All the Way Down, which is the new John Green book. I think it's been a few years since he released his last one, so everyone was pretty excited that he was coming out with another book. And I really liked it. It wasn't my favorite of his stories, and I wonder if it's just because I'm getting older, sad face, but it felt a little young to me. Like So I'll tell you the premise, I guess. The girl, Aza, it's her and her best friend. Her best friend, Daisy, is pretty cool. She writes Star Wars fan fiction about Chewie and Rey as a couple, and she's hilarious. And then, so the story is about Aza. She's kind of living with anxiety, so a lot of the book is about her struggle with that and how she kind of goes through her friendships and eventually relationships with that and how it affects those aspects of her life. And also there's kind of the small town mystery vibe about someone's disappeared and they got kind of get involved with that. But I really liked it. My favorite part, as is with most of John Green's books, is the sense of humor that he gives his main characters. Anytime that Aza was kind of in her internal monologue or she was talking to her best friend, I was just laughing out loud, even though a lot of the subject matter of his books is kind of sad and can be depressing. I just love the inner voice and the conversational voice he gives his characters. I think it's hilarious. So it's definitely a fun read. I recommend it.
It took me a minute to catch up that Chewie and Rey was not a ship. Like, I'm assuming that's not a ship. Right?
No, no, it is.
I mean, somewhere in the fandom, probably.
Yeah. I just got completely distracted on that level and lost like half of what you were saying. Oh,
there's
my gosh.
There's a whole conversation in the book about how Chewie's, people get mad at her. That, like, it comes up that her fans get mad at her because Chewie's not a human per se, but she's like, it's not about if he's a human, it's if he's a person. And it's hilarious what she says to justify it, but it's cute.
That's amazing. Yeah. I've been like waiting to pick this up because I bought tickets to see John's going on tour. Hank and John are both going on tour for this book, and they're coming to San Francisco on Halloween, which is great, but I didn't realize that the ticket to see him came with a copy of the book.
Oh.
And I don't know if I can justify having, like, two copies of Turtles All the Way Down, so I was like, oh, I want to read it, but, like, I don't want to buy two copies. Sorry, John.
Yeah. But, that's so fun that they're coming on tour, though.
Yeah, yeah, they're doing, like, this big bus tour, and I'm like, I haven't done anything fandom-related since, like, Comic-Con, but that doesn't really count. Like, small, niche fandom-y things. I haven't done that in a while, so I was like, oh, I'll go see John Green. That'll be fun.
Yeah, is it, like, a Halloween party, or is it just the normal?
I'm sure people will be dressed up, because I feel like everybody dresses up for Halloween. Like, I've been to concerts and stuff, and people are all dressed up. But I think it's just him talking about the book. It's whatever he's been doing in all the other cities. There's like 20 cities on the list, and they have this big tour bus that I just saw on Instagram, and yeah, it should be really fun. They're doing it in like this big, one of the theaters in San Francisco called The Curran. It's where they do a lot of like the musical touring productions that come from Broadway.
Oh, cool.
So there are like a lot of tickets still left if you're in like the San Francisco Bay Area and you couldn't get tickets to like something in Pleasanton or like couldn't get tickets other places because I guess they sold out in a lot of other areas. Like this is just a really big space and there's still a lot of tickets and you can still get like a $30 ticket. So if you're interested, buy your ticket and maybe we can say hi.
I hope everyone just goes dressed up as turtles. So you should start that.
Oh my
trend.
God, that would be, I'm sure if there's not a fan campaign to do that right now, like what are we all doing with our lives?
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure they're going to cosplay Chewie and Rey. Like that'll be
oh,
a
that
thing.
Oh, that too. That'd
exactly. Good one. Yep.
Laura, tell me about what you've been doing this week.
So this week I just kind of got sucked into this new show called The Good Doctor. And I didn't feel like it was originally going to be something that I would even be that interested in. It was just one of those random moments where I was like, oh, I've got nothing to do. Oh, let's check this out. And I actually kind of surprisingly liked it with reservations. It's a series about basically this this kid who has autism, high-functioning autism, they say. And he also has savant-like capabilities, and he's this, you know, has the potentiality to be this amazing surgeon. And it's all about this hospital taking a risk on him and guiding him through the process and where does it go. And his, like, mentor is Richard Schiff, who used to play Toby on The West Wing. That's actually kind of what drew me into it because I was kind of a West Wing junkie. But the show ended up being, I was kind of concerned if it would be like super exploitative or, you know, do we need one more TV show where we talk about people with amazing abilities who have a condition and don't really go into a condition on any level with any degree of seriousness or realistically portray it. And I was actually kind of pleasantly surprised on this one. Like I cautiously watch like... I'm three episodes in, and I've kind of cautiously been like, okay, I think I could go for episode number four. And it's kind of cool. It's sort of balancing what the past life was of the guy who plays the good doctor in his childhood, which you're only getting glimpses of. He was from a very broken home. And kind of what he's trying to accomplish today, both in just his regular day-to-day life versus his professional life. And in some senses, it's almost easier for him to be a doctor the way they're doing it rather than one-on-one interaction with people where things are out of context of like a medical conversation. It's really kind of interesting, so I'm kind of intrigued with it.
I've also been tuning into the show, and I'm not sure if I'm going to keep up with it just because I know myself in medical dramas, and sometimes I feel like they're more fun to binge after, like, the whole series is out. But, yeah, I think, like, something about it definitely intrigues me, too, enough that I haven't dropped it yet. But I really like Freddie Highmore too, like just as an actor, and I was just really happy to see that he had something lined up after Bates Motel ended. So like you, I'm like cautiously into this show. Just so funny because I didn't think I would be.
Yeah, no, I should have mentioned it was Freddie Highmore playing the good doctor, and he has this really uncanny ability to kind of couple this I don't want to say childlike innocence, because that's wrong. That's like the wrong term. But this ability of not getting context in social situations, along with the fact that it has a lot of other things that go along with the character, physicality, the fact that he really has difficulty making eye contact with people. Like, he does a lot of really good work with this. So, but I agree with you too. It's definitely one of those little more bingey feels. Like, I did 3 episodes in a row. I kind of agree with you. I'm not sure if I would have done just like one-offs.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. And I know a few of our listeners too are like keeping up with this, so write in and let us know if you're still watching. This week for my Halloween hype, I actually went to see a movie. I went to see Goodbye Christopher Robin, which is out in limited release in the United States, and I think that it's got a wide release coming next month. This is like one of 2 Winnie the Pooh biopic type things that we're getting over the next few years. One is, of course, the Disney Winnie the Pooh movie, but I feel like that's more like Hook meets the story of the Milne family, because from what I've read about, you know, the synopsis for that one, it's just kind of like Christopher Robin is a grown man and he has to find his like childhood again through these characters that he used to play with when he was a kid. This is a little bit more serious, and it stars Donal Gleeson and Margot Robbie as Mr. and Mrs. Milne, and then kind of takes you through A.A. Milne, who is the author of Winnie the Pooh, through his PTSD following the First World War, and them having this child, Christopher Robin, who they call Billy Moon, and kind of how his son helps spawn this beloved fictional character that we still adore to this day. And it's a little bit dark at times. It's a little bit funny. It's kind of got a little bit of everything, and especially if you're not too familiar with the story of the actual inspiration behind, you know, Christopher Robin and also like his family, it is kind of like really cool to see that play out on the big screen. And yeah, it's very well done. I really enjoyed it a lot. So if you're looking for something to watch, it's a very fall movie because it's got a little bit of drama, but it's also a little bit heartwarming towards the end.
In the trailers for this one, Christopher Robin, like the child, is so perfect.
I know,
as
right?
Christopher Robin, just from seeing him in the trailer.
Seriously.
It's like they plucked him out of like a Campbell's chicken soup ad.
Yeah.
From like the 1920s.
Well, also, like, if you want to even think about like the Christopher Robin like classic image in like the Disney mm-hmm. Winnie the Pooh, like seriously, if you had to pick a kid who was like the cartoon, like it's like, oh my gosh, like this is the kid. Absolutely. I totally agree
with
you.
Yeah, totally. So get out to see this in theaters because I really enjoyed it, and let me know what you think when you do. We are going to jump right into the news this week. We've got a bunch of stories that broke this past week, and then a few a little bit older ones, because there were some things that we really wanted to make sure we got in here since we did miss last week. I have the first news story. We're going to talk about the Black Panther trailer. This is the second trailer for the film that we got. We got it earlier this week, and it's like so exciting because the first trailer was really great because it gave us kind of this really nice scope of T'Challa and where he comes from and kind of the imminent threat that we're going to see him battle when the movie hits theaters. But this time around, since they have a little bit more wiggle room to play, we got a really good look at some of the supporting cast. The cast for this movie is like one of my favorite parts about this movie, because on top of Chadwick Boseman, you have Michael B. Jordan, Lupita Nyong'o, and Danai from The Walking Dead, who's just like amazing in everything she does. And it's just like, this movie looks so good. Daniel Kaluuya's in this. Who else is in this? Andy Serkis, Martin Freeman, not Morgan Freeman. That's like wishful thinking. But yeah, this movie just looks so, so, so good. And I feel like everybody's super excited for it. It hits theaters on February 16th, 2018. So we've not gotten too long to wait. I want to know what you guys think about this, if you've seen it, though.
I think everyone looks amazing. All I really knew about it before was that the cast was amazing, as you said. But now that we've seen them in the trailer, we can verify that in these roles they'll be extra amazing, is what I'm getting from the trailer. Basically all I know about Black Panther is what we learned in Civil War. So what I got from the trailer was that he's not the only superhero, I guess, in this movie. Do you either of you know like the background? Like, is there kind of a group of Black Panthers, or like what's Michael B. Jordan's character?
I have no idea. I have to say, other than pretty much like Wonder Woman and some of more of those. I'm more of a DC person than I am a Marvel person, so I will say that I'm not super up on the mythology here.
Yeah, it's so funny because neither Selena or I are very well versed in Black Panther, but I do know that Michael B. Jordan is playing a character named Eric Killmonger, who is an old enemy, and it sounds to me, from what we know of both trailers, that he's kind of like vying to make sure that T'Challa doesn't take his rightful place as the king of Wakanda, but it definitely looks like they've got some bad blood there that has been building over the course of the last few years. And I think that that's what's so exciting about Black Panther, like all of these like entities, these new Marvel entities that we're getting, they're exciting because they're not like regurgitated retellings of superheroes that we've all like kind of heard tell about, you know, like they're not like the ones that you hear about all the time, like Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, things like that. Like you're getting like Captain Marvel and like Doctor Strange and Black Panther, and they're so exciting because they're so new to so many audiences that maybe didn't grow up reading the comics.
I have to say that is a little bit what got my attention when I saw the trailer. Just the amazing level of cast on there, and again, being with something new, like pretty much when it was Danai Gurira, Lupita Luango, Martin Freeman, I was like, whoa, there's like this massive like A-list set of actors here that could be doing anything and they're doing this. So I think it's got one of the strongest casts as far as people who are known as being quote-unquote serious actors in a really long time in a superhero movie, so that alone pretty much just has my attention.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Another thing that kind of caught my eye in the trailer was just how excited I am to actually see Wakanda in some detail, because we've heard about it like with Captain America's shield and for other elements in the Marvel Universe, but just the look of the actual place in the trailer looks so cool, and it's like a whole other world that we get to explore, kind of, that's not just New York or America. So that's exciting. Okay, so for the next story, we're going to tackle the mess that was Cursed Child Broadway tickets. Did either of you try to get them?
I did.
Yeah, I got the, what was it, the standby list? I made the standby list, so,
You know, I also made the standby list, and then one of our hype listeners, Jewel, who is amazing and also runs our Goodreads group for this podcast, she had an extra code that she gave to me, and so I was gonna use that to potentially buy tickets for myself and some friends. And oh man, I feel like they built this up, like they made it so attainable, and then we all got burned so hard, at least on the hypeable staff side of things.
So for anyone that's not familiar or who was lucky enough to not get involved with this ticket buying process, what you had to do was, I think a couple weeks ago, you had to register for the chance to get a code to potentially be able to buy a ticket. So there was like a 5-day window where you could register to get a code. And then on October 16th, they sent out the golden tickets that were the codes to be able to buy tickets. And I think at least 10 of us from Hypeable registered to try to get tickets. And I think maybe 3 ended up getting codes. And some of us got on standby. And some of us, I think there were even people who didn't even get on standby. And then on October 18th, the tickets went on sale. But it wasn't like with most other events that you see, we're at like 10 a.m. Eastern time, they go on sale. I guess for everyone that got a code, they'd send you a time which you could purchase tickets. So even if you got a code, you couldn't even go in at the beginning. And it just ended up being a huge mess. I think out of the 10 people who tried to get tickets at Hypeable, I think we ended up getting like 2 tickets between all of us or something crazy like that. And I, as you said, Pam, like I really didn't think it was going to be this crazy. Like the one that went on sale in the West End, it was a big deal. Like you kind of had to wait in an online on in the internet for like a few hours to get in, but it just seemed to go way more smoothly and it was way easier for that. So that's kind of what I was expecting, but this one was crazy.
It reminds me of the saga that I went through when I got tickets for Benedict Cumberbatch in Hamlet a couple of years ago. And it was a very similar situation, and it was all down to like what number you got, which meant what time you could get on. And even with me getting a low number, which was a good number in that scenario, I was online for something like 3 hours at 4 o'clock in the morning, slowly waiting for the whole, like you had to be in the queue online. It was complete insanity. So yeah, I feel bad for people who went through the Potter thing, because it seemed worse than that, and I wasn't quite sure anything could
it's
be worse
like,
than
honestly,
that.
Honestly, and you guys will understand the struggle. It's also like the Comic-Con hotel lottery. Yeah.
Oh my god,
so
yes.
Really,
yeah.
Like, I honestly, it was one of those things where it's like we've all experienced really terrible lottery systems, and you think to yourself, nothing is ever going to be worse than this. And then Ticketmaster comes along and completely like crushes all of our dreams. But we did have, like, there were a few people that, I mean, there were a lot of people that did get lucky. We have a listener named Laura who said that she got tickets and also tweeted at us saying that she was like super, super excited to go experience it as a play, because even though the story, like the book itself, didn't really, you know, speak to her very much, it's like everybody's been hyping up what they've been able to do with the stage production. And I totally understand that. Like, I feel like that's why a lot of us that weren't able to go to London with the rest of Hypeable were really excited to potentially go on Broadway, because all of you guys had such a great experience seeing the story unfold before your eyes. So, oh well.
Yeah, I would say even Andrew, who has been very critical of the story, has said every single time, but you really need to go see it live. But you really need to go see it live. Like, that's a huge compliment to a story he doesn't like, saying go and do that. So yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely worth it. I was lucky enough to see it in London as well. No matter what they put us through, I would still try, because they do keep sending out emails being like, and J.K. Rowling is tweeting even, saying that there will be more opportunities to buy tickets before previews start, which I have no idea what that means.
I don't believe her
but
anymore.
If that happens.
I feel like she's letting me down with all these high expectations I have.
Like, are they adding matinee performances? Like, I'm not sure what that means. And
I have no idea.
And it's already the part one, part two situation, because that makes it even more complex when you're trying to see both parts in a fairly quick amount of time.
So true. I think I'm just gonna, you know, I would have loved to have seen like Noma and like all of these other amazing cast members everybody's like talked so much about. I would love to have seen the play with them, but I think I'm just gonna wait and try my luck when it starts touring. I'm assuming it's gonna tour, so yeah.
I would say, yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, it is extra intriguing because the whole original cast is coming, so everyone's super excited. But I mean, no matter when you see the play, and I'm sure it'll be running for years, like, it'll still have the same magic that it has now.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, at some point too, like, I don't know if you guys experienced this with your like trying to get tickets, but like the tickets were just so expensive, because by the time I got in the second group, like, all I could find were tickets that were $200 for each part. I was like, look, I love Harry Potter, but I can't justify $400 on top of flying out from San Francisco and, like, figuring out where I'm going to stay and stuff like that. So
moving on to slightly happier Harry Potter news, we've had some more news about Fantastic Beasts 2 and some new casting announcements. One that's very exciting is the casting of Nicholas Flamel, because he is a character, obviously, that we know from Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, since he is the maker of the Philosopher's Stone. So Brontës Jodorowsky has been cast as Nicholas Flamel, and all we really know about him is that he was an alchemist, he was the creator of the Philosopher's Stone, and he ended up passing away at the end of Harry Potter book one because they destroyed the stone. And we know mostly from Dumbledore's chocolate frog card that they were kind of work partners. They did some work in alchemy together, and we don't know exactly what that entails, because Nicholas Flamel obviously had already created the stone at that point, because he was quite a bit older, hundreds of years older. So it looks like, to me, based on this casting announcement, just the more I hear about who's being cast, what characters they're including, is that we're really going to be diving into Dumbledore's story in these next, definitely the next Fantastic Beasts film, and potentially the following ones, which is exciting. And J.K. Rowling hopped onto Twitter to kind of share her own excitement about it, and she sent a picture of Nicholas Flamel, the real life Nicholas Flamel's tombstone, because he is a real person who is known to be an alchemist and is said to have created the Philosopher's Stone in real life as well. So she was at the Musée de Cluny in Paris, or sorry, she was at the British Library. The tombstone was on loan there, and she shared a picture of Nicholas Flamel's tombstone saying, "Guess what this is? I've just seen it and was mesmerized. It is indeed Nicholas Flamel's headstone, viewable at British Library's Harry Potter exhibition." P.S. British Library has a Harry Potter exhibition coming at the end of the month. So she's getting excited about Nicholas Flamel's casting too. What do you guys think about this announcement?
Well, I was really excited to hear that we're going to get a little bit more of like the lore that we grew up with the original stories. I think that that's always really cool in terms of like a nostalgia thing. And it's kind of funny that that's potentially going to play into Grindelwald's quest to kind of be this powerful wizard. It almost kind of feels like maybe that'll be his scapegoat, because we know that he wanted to master death in terms of mastering all three of the Hallows. That's like something we already know. But it is kind of interesting to think about how Nicholas Flamel and maybe potentially the Philosopher's Stone will play into, you know, like, was that like his like first initial plan and then his backup was the Hallows, or was it vice versa? Things like that. Or is that like not going to play into effect at all? Is he just going to be somebody that like is like a knowledge, you know, that just like dumps a lot of knowledge that maybe Newt and Dumbledore need to potentially track down Grindelwald? You know, it's like it's kind of interesting to think about all of the different ways that this could play into the story of Fantastic Beasts and stuff. I'm still really excited for this movie, by the way. I know like some people are kind of like so-so on it, especially now that we know where it's really going to go, but I'm still intrigued by what's going to happen.
I'm definitely excited. Yeah. It's interesting, like you said, because as far as we know, Grindelwald didn't have the same drive as Voldemort for immortality. His quest was kind of more for power and wizard dominance over Muggles. So I even wonder if some of the other research that Dumbledore and Nicholas Flamel were doing will be what plays into Grindelwald's plan. Because I'm just not sure what he would want with the Philosopher's Stone if he's not looking for immortality. I know it has some other properties, such as turning metal into gold, and so maybe it'll play into one of those, but I'm really excited to see where they take it. I just hope it's not in the same way that Voldemort.
Yeah, you know what, you're right, because I think I said, and I'll correct myself now, that he wanted to be the Master of Death, but that's not really what he wanted. He really was just interested in the wand to, like, overlord everybody with the power that it possesses. So it's not like he really cared about dying so much as spreading his hateful rhetoric and making sure wizards would come out on top. So it is interesting to kind of think about how this all plays into the grand scheme of things.
So I'm glad you guys are super excited about the Harry Potter and, you know, the next Fantastic Beast movie. I think it's that one's going to be a big hit. I don't think there's anybody who doubts that Fantastic Beasts will be a big hit. But it does put me in mind of another thing that came out this week, and I'm like, I'm not so sure this is going to be a hit. And I was actually kind of mystified why the first one was a hit, which is the Mamma Mia sequel, which it's hard to believe I'm even saying the words Mamma Mia sequel, because the first movie, honestly, in my opinion, was probably the worst movie musical of all time. I'm not sure what was more painful, the fact that Pierce Brosnan couldn't sing at all, or Colin Firth slid into notes in this tenor voice that just had me gripping the sides of my movie theater like seat going, oh, make it stop, make it stop, make it stop. I mean, in fairness, there were other people in the original movie. Christine Baranski was great. Meryl Streep was great. But yeah, there was some lacking moments of it. And the news we have this week is that Cher is joining the cast of Mamma Mia, but we don't know as who, because the movie is based on the musical and there was no part two of the musical, so who knows where this one is going. What do you guys think about this?
I definitely agree with you that it's not a great movie musical, and also that I'm a person that really doesn't like the actual musical. Do you like the base material, or was it just the movie that you had a problem with?
I have to say I liked it a lot more live because I saw it on Broadway 3 times. Not because I was really motivated to do that, but from weird circumstance, I actually ended up seeing it 3 times. I only paid for one of those 3 times. but it was a lot more enjoyable when you saw it live, I think, contained on a stage with all the way the choreography really works in that kind of situation. And I don't know. I feel like a lot of times musicals lose something when you put them on the big screen. Not always, but frequently they do. And I think that's what happened when Mamma Mia hit the screen. It just sort of lost the charm of the story on Broadway. But even on Broadway, you got to like the finale and everybody's suddenly in like these hyper real 70s disco clothes. And you're like, what is this curtain call finale thing? So, yeah, I had mixed feelings about the Broadway show, but still liked it way better than the movie.
Okay. I like a good ABBA hit just as much as the next person that likes campy music, because that's just me. But, yeah, I think that it's, like, it's so funny because what Mamma Mia is a jukebox musical, and so that's just basically, like, something that has nothing to do with ABBA. It's not like Jersey Boys, which uses the music of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons to tell the story of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, like, in a musical form. Mamma Mia is just, like, somebody that really liked ABBA that was like, this would make a really fun, like, fanfic, you know, centered around all of these songs. And so, yeah, I think it's, like, I feel like movie, like, stories like that shouldn't necessarily be made into movies, but I think the people that like this just really like the campiness of it. I heard that, they're actually playing around with telling a little bit of the backstory of, like, Donna and all these other characters in the sequel, because they're casting for, you know, younger versions of Donna and her friends. So that might give us a little bit more of an indication as to where this is going to go. But I was very surprised that people were, like, really excited about Cher, but I feel like she's become, like, this national treasure on Twitter, so everybody's just excited about anything that Cher does.
If that's where it's going, I wonder if Cher would end up playing Donna's mother then.
Oh, that would be fun.
Because I'm sure it'll go back and tell the story of kind of Donna and Sam, and maybe even bring in the other two guys as well, but I think that would work really well, actually, if Cher was her mom.
Well, I guess we'll see in 2018 when Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again hits theaters. We have a little bit, it's like, this is so funny, like jumping from Mamma Mia to, well, I guess this is another sequel-ish. It's more of a spinoff, but we have a little bit of Star Wars news for you guys. First up, the Han Solo anthology that's coming out this coming May has finally wrapped. Of course, there was a little bit of drama surrounding this movie earlier this year when we heard they fired the original directors and brought on Ron Howard to finish the project. So his stint on this movie is done. I don't know, it was probably like more for press than anything else, but he's really been like keeping Star Wars fans in the loop as much as he can over the course of his journey as director for this project, and kind of showing everybody, like, nothing to see here, nothing to worry about. Look at all this happy footage I have of the cast. You know, look at all these happy pictures we've taken together on Twitter and stuff like that. So it's kind of only fitting that he took to Twitter again to let Star Wars fans know that the official title for this new movie is just called Solo, a Star Wars story. Nondescript,
nice.
Super, like, generic, but I guess if they're trying to keep things under wraps, this is the way to go. There's, like, nothing to go off of here, you know?
Yeah. But that's kind of typical with, I think, most of the Star Wars franchise, at least in the era we're in now. Like, you're not gonna, it's so locked down. It's such a lockdown set. There's, you know, you're practically promising them your firstborn, you know, to work on that movie in any capacity whatsoever. So, I mean, I do get the silence, but I also do appreciate that Ron Howard, more so than a lot of other directors, was willing just to kind of put out certain things on Twitter just to give fans a brief glimpse. I think he really kind of understands how to just give fans a little taste of something just to kind of keep them, you know, sort of, I don't want to say interested, because they're definitely going to still be interested, but just to kind of have him understand that the fans want to be connected and he's trying to do the best that he possibly can.
That's a really good point too. And I think that it does put people at ease a little bit, just because there was so much controversy surrounding this project, specifically right after they fired the original directors. And you know, like, Ron Howard he's really great. He's put out some really great movies in the past. I feel like maybe he has the gentle touch that this particular story needed to stay afloat. And I think that it'll be interesting to see what he's done with it, and just also like to hear like what he's got to say once they start doing the press rounds and things like that, because I would just be more interested to see like how much they kept from the original entity that they were kind of going with when they had the original directors versus how much he came in and kind of switched up and kind of played around with. So
yeah. The one thing I am looking forward to with Ron Howard, I mean, and you know, any director can certainly have a clunker of a movie, and Lord knows Ron Howard has had a couple of those, but he's also had a bunch of really good smash successes too. I think at the heart of all of his movies is storyline, usually. Like, he doesn't get lost in the tech and the glitz, and I think in the Star Wars series, it could be a real danger for a director just to get super lost in all the special effects. And I feel like that's something that Ron Howard would actually not do. I feel like he'll be more focused on character and storyline. And I feel like that's something that people really, really want when it comes to a Han Solo movie.
Yeah, totally. It's in general, like, regardless of whether or not any of this stuff had happened, I think that Star Wars fans are always going to be incredibly protective of somebody like a Han Solo, because he's so beloved and he's like one of the original three. So it makes sense that we're all kind of on pins and needles, you know, anticipating what they're going to throw at us when this movie hits theaters in May. So one of the other things that we wanted to talk about very briefly, because we missed last week, is that we got a new trailer for the Star Wars The Last Jedi last week. And this trailer is like jam-packed with action. There, we could probably go like frame by frame, but we don't have time. So one of the things that I did want to bring up very quickly, and you guys can bring up any other stand-up moments too that might have struck you, is a moment that the fandom kind of just couldn't stop talking about as soon as this trailer hit the internet, which is the last scene where it looks as though Rey could be heading over to the dark side and you know, taking Kylo Ren up on his offer to help teach her what she needs to know. Just kind of like, okay, like, what's happening here? Is this all a trick? Is she trying to infiltrate? Is she really, like, seriously taking him up on his offer? There's, like, a lot of stuff to unpack. But, like, overall, this trailer was really great and definitely makes me even more excited to check this movie out later on this year. What did you guys think?
Super excited to see it. There's just so much there with the trailer. I mean, it just, after the really bad, like, sequels in the 90s, just having the series come back so, so amazingly strong and be like, this is what we all fell in love with the first series of movies. The one thing, I agree with you totally, Pam, at the end, it does make it look like, oh, what is she going to do? I just wonder if they're going to play around with the concept of all about, you know, the good and the bad, the light and the dark. And it's always been a no middle ground situation in the franchise. Like, you can't have a little bit of both. I'm curious to know if maybe they'll play around with that concept a little bit, because certainly Rey is a person who's, you know, very forceful, very prone to temper. Like, she's not a very zen person. So I'm curious if they can come to the center rather than the far sides of good or evil. I'm curious if maybe that's where it'll go.
Yeah, that's definitely something that I've been thinking about too, because when you call something The Last Jedi, your gut reaction is, well, Rey's shown this incredible amount of power and some kind of relationship to the Force. So your knee-jerk reaction is to say, Rey must be the last Jedi. But as from everything we know of what it takes to be a Jedi, Rey would be, like, the worst Jedi because she can't control her emotions. So it's like, is Rey maybe something else? And is the last Jedi a reference to Luke instead? You know? And is she going to be the bridge between having these two ultimatums? Like, you can either, like, be a Jedi, super zen, not feel anything, or you can let, like, emotions overcome you and go over to the dark side. Like, maybe she's the one person that is able to do both and still hone this power for good. Like, we don't really know, but those are definitely thoughts that I've had as well.
Yeah, I have to say I'm very much in the camp of I really feel like Luke is the last Jedi, and that whatever happens after that, it is something new. It mm-hmm. is something different. They'll rename it. They'll come up with a different hierarchy. I mean, obviously the same powers within the Force are there, but I really feel like, yeah, the last Jedi is absolutely mm-hmm. Luke.
Totally. I guess we'll see in December. I'm ready.
Speaking of new movies and whatnot, Netflix, this one I just kind of did a double take when I read the number. Netflix wants to release 80 original movies. That's 80 by 2018. That's like more than a movie a week. It's like a movie and a half a week, counting up the number of weeks of years. And I love the idea of there being more original content out there. I think there's absolutely a place for that to get beyond the whole studio system and what gets greenlit for ridiculous reasons or what doesn't. But I am wondering if 80 is just too much. Are things just going to get lost in the sauce with that number? Or, I don't know, what do you guys think about that whole plan of Netflix?
I think it's exciting because obviously Netflix's content has been so good, but you're right, it is a concern. Like, how can they continue to keep up that level of quality with that much quantity? But I'm also kind of upset by it because, like, one of my favorite things about Netflix is just kind of turning it on and going to, like, an old TV show or an old movie that you love and putting that on. And I just wonder what the volume of original content that they're putting out, is that part of it going to be lost? Like, are they going to end up cutting those deals with the studios and not having those movies that come out in theaters or the old stuff that we love anymore, or, like, the old series that you want to binge that aren't Netflix originals? That's what I kind of worry about with this story.
That's a really good point, because we're already kind of starting to see that with some of the WB entities. Like, they just pulled One Tree Hill from the platform, and for a brief moment Gilmore Girls is gone too, but it's since returned. But it just kind of make you wonder what is going to happen next. And it's also like, is it really, like, is Netflix just adapting to the new trends? Because we know that Disney is gearing up to launch its own streaming platform. So naturally, the assumption is that they'll pull all the Disney titles from Netflix to put them over there. That makes sense. So are they adapting to the times, or is this, like, Netflix, you know, like, doing its own thing? Are they, like, leading the pack still? It is kind of interesting. But I will say that I've enjoyed a lot of their original movies that have come out. Like, I just watched Okja finally, and I really liked that. I really liked To the Bone. I know they have a couple of deals with, like, some big time actors, like Adam Sandler has a 4-movie deal with Netflix. So I'd be interested to see if they do more of that and kind of peg things around, you know, surefire actors that will bring in views, or if they'll go a different route and go more indie.
There's just so many players right now between Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, as you say, Disney is doing their own company. Like, there are so many players at the table right now. Like, I can really see people starting to go, oh wait, what network is that on? You know, network in a loose sense. You know, what streaming service is that on? Like, I don't know that the 80 movies is per se going to inspire Netflix loyalty. I mean, people certainly have it, but I think they're just going to go around on whatever gets the biggest word of mouth. And depending on how much you dilute the pool, I don't know how much word of mouth starts to happen.
I think even movies get far less word of mouth on Netflix than TV shows, in my opinion. So it's interesting that they're putting so many resources, obviously, into their original movies when it seems to be their original series that get them the most attention. So, but I am excited to see what they come up with. Keeping it on the Netflix topic, Chelsea Handler for the last couple years has had a talk show on Netflix. She transitioned from her talk show at E! To one at Netflix, and last year it was 3 half-hour episodes a week, and this year she's moved to 1 hour-long episode a week, and she's actually decided to end that talk show after only her second season. And she put out a statement about why she's decided this, and her main reason is so she can focus on political activism and focusing more on projects that lend itself to that and on things that she's passionate about. So she's going to be focusing on what she said, talking to people that she doesn't talk to enough. So people of different ethnicities, religions, and political philosophies. And she is actually working right now with Netflix on a documentary. So she's not necessarily ending her partnership with Netflix, but she is ending her talk show. And I do watch her talk show. I really love it. So I was really sad when I originally heard this news. But then when I kind of heard that her partnership is continuing, she's going to be continuing to make documentaries, I was really excited because I don't know if either of you watch her show, but some of her strengths, I guess. So one thing I like about it is that when she has an actress or an actor on, or she has a lot of politicians on as well, she doesn't just have them on to talk about kind of what they have upcoming, like what movies they have coming out or something. Like, she had Cara Delevingne on to talk about women empowerment, and she had Jessica Biel on to talk about motherhood. Like, she has them on to talk about issues, or she'll have like dinner parties. I remember she had one dinner party with the cast or Team Cap from Civil War, and they all talk about a certain topic. And one thing that's great about Chelsea is that she just asks really good questions, and she's not pretentious in any way. She just seeks to understand people. So through her understanding people's opinion more, you end up understanding it more. And also she's really, really funny when she does that. So sad to see the talk show go, but excited to see her make more documentaries about issues, especially in the political landscape. What do you guys think?
I think it's probably a good point for her to wrap it. Like, people get, like, it's not like it's Ellen. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like Ellen is kind of innocuous and could kind of, like, go on forever versus Chelsea Handler's show has a very different, specific tone and stuff. And I feel like it's probably good for her to wrap at this point and then figure out what is the next thing she wants to do. I think she's had a really good run with it. But yeah, I think this is a good time for her to look for what her next thing is going to be.
And I think too, like you were mentioning, that she is no stranger to talking about politics or having political figures on her show. It's a really good jumping off platform for her because she's already kind of low key been doing that. I think a lot of people, maybe when they read this, are not like super familiar with Chelsea Handler, kind of like, well, she's a comedian, like this doesn't make sense. But if you've watched her show, then it kind of does. And I commend her for doing something that she's passionate about, because people that are passionate about things, that usually makes for like the best content when you follow your passions and see where they take you. So
yeah, like her having a future with something like what Bill Maher does, I think would be very possible. Like, you're absolutely right, Pam. She's got a lot to say on the political scene, and I think she'd be great at formulating something really quality like that.
I think if you're only familiar with her talk show or her comedy, one thing you should check out is her other Netflix series, Chelsea Does, which is only 4 episodes, and they all tackled a particular topic. I think one was marriage, and, you know, racism and drugs, and just in kind of like an hour and a half format, she tackled the topic like head on, and they're hilarious, but also like awesomely informative, so I definitely recommend those if you're looking for what this might look like or next step.
All right, you guys, this is a story that I've been waiting for like 2 weeks to talk about. I don't know if any of you guys watched Roswell back in the day. It was on the CW back before the CW was the CW, but this show was like my life for a while. Roswell is just the best, and the original series centered around three aliens that had to figure out how to hide their identities from, you know, everybody that was normal and still figure out how to go to high school. It's so funny because, like, Laura and I both come from Twilight, like, you know, the Twilight fandom. And when Twilight came out, I was like, this is just Max and Liz all over again, because it's very similar. It's like normal girl falls in love with guy with superpowers after guy saves her. Like, that's how the story starts. But something about this show is just so charming and it's so great. And I think it's still on Netflix. So if you're interested in watching the original, highly recommend. But that's not what we're going to talk about today. The CW recently announced that they're actually looking to reboot the series. And they want to do it in a very intriguing angle that kind of plays around with one of the ideas that the original show brought forth. So they want to make a show about basically, it's like Roswell, a retelling of Roswell, where the idea of undocumented immigrants is a little bit more explored. Because on the show, they always joked that they were the kids, the aliens were illegal aliens, and it was a very tongue-in-cheek thing, but they were also always being hunted by the police and by the law, people that thought that they might be there, but weren't exactly sure. And in the new series, they're going to explore like kind of all facets of what it means to be undocumented and an immigrant. So the new Liz is a daughter of undocumented immigrants, and Max is actually going to be a police officer who is also hiding his true identity. So this has been met with a little bit of conflicting emotions from the Roswell fandom, which is still going strong online, because two of the original cast members were actually working on a spinoff called Baron and Toluca, which didn't necessarily follow their original characters because they don't have the licensing to do that. But kind of they were still playing their characters. And in their spinoff version, whatever you want to call it, they're two agents that have to learn to work together. So they basically are their Roswell characters all grown up, but they're not their Roswell characters because they don't have the rights to do that. So everybody was kind of hoping that they would be able to greenlight this because there's still a huge following and there's been a lot of fan campaigns to try and help them out. But now that the CW is kind of going forth with this reboot, it doesn't really look like that's going to happen, which is kind of unfortunate. And the likelihood that we'll see a lot of these original cast members come back for the reboot is very unlikely, just because they will be telling like what is essentially a whole new story. So it's kind of bittersweet, I think. I'm not sure how I feel about this yet, but curiosity will definitely pique my interest, and y'all know I'll be watching this anyway, so we'll see what happens. But that's your Roswell scoop.
It's so funny you mentioned Comic-Con earlier, because 2 years ago at Comic-Con we had one of those days that it was just like pouring rain, which was bizarre in California, but it was. And we all stayed in and we binge watched Roswell. And it was me and like one other person. Maybe it was Karen. I forget who like hadn't seen it. And we were just like, oh, wow. So like, I like binge watched the whole first season. And then I went out and was like, I got home. I was like, I need to go see the rest of this. And then just totally did. So yeah, I think it is ripe for a reboot. There's so much possibility of, I think, Pam, you're absolutely right, of where they could go with that series and what they could do with it. And I think it's also a lot more acceptable now than, say, the late 90s, early aughts, as to when that series was on, to do some more political stuff, more like current climate. Like, it was theoretical then, now it's not so theoretical. So I think there's absolutely a place for that series.
Yeah, totally. It's just like, it does kind of suck because Mahandra Delfino and Brendan Fair were, you know, like they were really invested in their own little spinoff. And I hope that they're still able to make it happen. Like, maybe the reboot will help jumpstart that in some way. But if you guys haven't seen the trailer for that, it's called Baron and Toluca. You can Google it, and they funded this whole like really fun 5-minute trailer for, you know, gives you a feel for what the series could be. And even if, like, you know, you haven't heard about it yet, but you did watch Roswell back in the day, it's going to feel very nostalgic and very much like coming home to that series. They've done a great job with the idea for it, but definitely looks like we'll probably see this before we ever see that.
So speaking of binging and coming home to things and things changing, there's this incredibly popular podcast. It's won tons of awards. I don't know how many people have seen it, or I should say heard it, and it's called Lore. And what Lore is about is taking an element of folklore and exploring what the real story is behind it. Their tagline is the scariest stories are the real ones. And what they've done, Amazon Prime Video, under the direction of Gail Hurd, who, if you don't know who Gail Hurd is, she's pretty much the reason The Walking Dead is on the air right now. She's the queen of basically the whole sort of horror genre, but realistic horror genre being on TV, and she's one of the executive producers on this. And what they've basically done is they've taken the podcast and they've shifted it into a 6-episode series for Amazon Prime Video that I started watching. I got turned into it because I was at New York Comic Con and I was like, oh, what's this Gail Ann Hurd project? And I went to go hear about it. The host of the panel was Kevin Smith, who does a really good job hosting things. Like, he won't phone it in, whatever. Kevin Smith went all fanboy on me over, like, talking about the series. Like, he was over-the-top fanboy. And I thought, okay, now you've got my attention. Kevin Smith just went all fanboy on this series. And I started binge-watching it. I don't know that I'm quite the fan that Kevin Smith is, but it definitely has an appeal. And the first 3 episodes are the ones that I watched. I haven't had a chance to do the last 3. But the first 3 episodes are sort of like the real stories behind changelings and witch trials, how the lobotomies started in the 1950s. That was another episode which was super, super scary. And the first one that they kicked it off with was sort of this, like, vampire tale, which I wasn't all that keen on, to be honest. I was a little bit like, Yohan, heard that before. But I really liked the other two. So I feel like the series, if the order that it goes in is the vampire story on how it's based on something real, then it talks about lobotomies, and then it talks about witch trials and when was the last witch burned. If you're going to watch it, I suggest skip the first one, dive into the second, and you're good. But it was really cool. It also, the way that they do it is they do very much like the podcast, a little bit of narration, and then they mix it in with like some like real life recreation. And they have some serious A-list actors on it. One of the ones who is really notable was from the Teen Wolf series, which was Holland Roden. I was like really super stunned and surprised as to how good she was, because there was really no comparison between her and her Teen Wolf character and what I was looking at. So kind of a cool item. Have either of you guys either heard the podcast or seen the series?
I have heard of the podcast, but, and I know that it's got a huge fan base and it's on my list. And like, I'm really glad to hear that the show is doing so well, because that's so cool. Just like as podcasters ourselves, it's so cool to see that, you know, like that's how far you can take something, you know, but the idea of the show definitely lends itself to, a different storytelling medium. And it's just really fun to see like where it's gone.
Yeah, it's a good rainy day watch, but like totally skip the first episode, start at number 2, where you're gonna be like, yeah, I'm not so into it.
Yeah, totally. I'm gonna have to put that on my list. I always forget that Amazon has, you know, original content, because I think we're so programmed to go to Netflix or Hulu and things like that, but Amazon's doing pretty good. And that is probably a good time to jump into our TV show of the week segment. This is where we tell you guys what we've been watching lately. There's a lot of fall TV that's still coming out, and both of you have really, really timely recommendations. So I'm going to let you guys go first, and then I'll talk about my lame recommendation for the week. So either one of you, whoever wants to go, can go.
I guess I'll go. Last year, I had pretty much been done with Once Upon a Time. After the hiatus. I was like, I just don't care anymore. I am not watching this show. I had just been like, done, don't care. Only tangentially even knew what happened at the back end of the season last year. And that's after being committed to 100 plus episodes of recording the Once Upon a Time podcast that Hypeable does called Onceable. So again, bringing up Comic-Con, I was at New York Comic-Con, and there was a Once Upon a Time panel that Karen was going to cover, and for one reason or another, Karen couldn't get there. And I'm like, all right, fine, I'll go do it. I at least know the background. Could not believe that they've totally rebooted the series, sort of. They're calling it a requel because it's kind of a reboot, kind of a sequel. For a person who was so totally done with this show, I'm actually really loving it. We're 2 episodes in. It's really cool. They've got a whole new spin on the characters that are still with the show. Basically, the action is now focusing on a grown-up Henry, who is so hot, by the way. Regina, Hook, and Gold is who they're continuing to follow. They all have like different names in this version, but it's actually really cool and really inventive. So far, I'm super invested in it. I'm just hoping that it doesn't become another giant product placement ad for Disney, because that's what happened to the series prior to this, and they kind of lost their way with that. So as long as that doesn't happen, I'm in. But right now, I'm pretty optimistic that this is going to be a great time to get back into this series if you dropped it.
For someone who hasn't watched since halfway through season one, do you think I could pick it up at this requel and kind of run with it, or would you recommend going back?
No, you totally could, actually. You totally could. It's even I was like confused for like maybe 5 minutes, and at the beginning when I was watching the first episode going, what? Oh, that's what there's a certain like, oh, that's what they did, catch up factor. But once you're on board with it, it clears itself up within like the first 5 to 10 minutes. And yeah, then you can totally jump right in with it. I don't think it's a problem.
Okay, it's one of those shows that I always thought was cool, but it just got past a point where it was like, I just can't catch up anymore, so I'm out, but maybe now.
Yeah, no, I totally feel you on that one. Yeah, no, you can, t if you drop the series, you can totally jump in on this. It is not a problem.
I think I'm gonna go with This Is Us. Had a really good episode this week. I know it's a big show on Hypeable, so it was the fourth episode of season two this week, and it was definitely my favorite episode of the season so far. I think the season kind of started. So one of the big mysteries on This Is Us, if you guys don't watch it, is how the Pearson's father died, because it kind of goes in different timelines. And I think the beginning of the season really picked up from the finale with that mystery. And then I think now they've kind of dropped that in season or in episode 3 and 4. We've kind of gotten back into the lives of the characters and where their stories are going for season two. And I'm really excited, mostly about what's happening with Kevin. Because Kevin was kind of the throwaway character in season one. He was like the successful actor, the brooding artist who wasn't appreciated enough. So he moved to New York to be a theater actor and had the subsequent love triangles and such, and that was kind of his arc. He was kind of the there to support his siblings, who had Kate and Randall both had really amazing arcs in season one. But in season two, Kevin's arc's getting really interesting. He's working on a movie, which is kind of forcing him to deal with a lot of the issues that he has with his father's death, which we hadn't really addressed in season one. And it's bringing up really cool aspects of kind of the what society places on men and the kind of concept of masculinity, because it goes back to his father and how he was always told to be the tough guy within the siblings and how that kind of follows him to this day. So I'm really excited to see how that keeps going throughout the season and how he grows because of that. And then Kate, has been my favorite character through the whole thing, and they did something really crazy to her character at the end of that episode, and I'm a little bit worried about it. I'm going to remain cautiously optimistic, but I'm concerned. I mean, not concerned, but I just kind of would prefer that they didn't do this. I don't want to spoil it. But yeah, I'm not sure where her arc's going in season 2. I'm a little worried about it. But overall,
I'm
the episode
also
is great.
Concerned about Kate. Yeah. I just don't think that. I don't know. It's so hard to talk about this without like saying it, you know. But just given all of the baggage that she has, I just kind of feel like it's too bad they're not going to let her work through that.
Yeah, they brushed over, and we can talk about this because it was season 1, but it was like in 10 minutes she was all of her problems hinged on the fact that her father died.
Yeah.
And then she cried once, and now it's fine, I guess. So I just think there's a lot left to go through before we get to this
new
level.
I really liked, this is not a spoiler really, but I really liked that scene where she's talking to Sylvester Stallone, who's a guest star on season 2, because he's in the movie that Kevin's doing, and she's like telling him about Jack, and she's like so, you know, happy, and then he realizes like what it means. I don't know, I thought that was really funny because she's like so into it.
Yeah, he's like, bring your father down.
Oh,
and she's
well,
like,
well, he's dead. And then he lets her act out the first scene of Rocky, and it's so funny.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see where they go with this, but this show, like, I feel like I enjoy This Is Us, but I have a lot of frustrations with it, and I feel like this new twist in the road is going to be a source of general frustration going forward, so.
I wonder. I want to trust them, because they usually do handle storylines pretty well, in my opinion, but I'm just a little concerned.
Same. Well, I have a really quick TV show recommendation. It's just that I'm a sucker for nostalgic things, and Hulu has, like, all the old 90s sitcoms up now, so that you can, like, binge them if you want to. They have everything from, like, Family Matters and Step by Step to Home Improvement and Full House, and it's just been really funny. I haven't really been, like, religiously binging any of them, but I've been watching all the pilots, because, you know, like, it's just, I don't think I've ever seen any of the pilots for these, because back then, it's like, if the shows were on, you just had to watch whatever episode it was on. There was no Netflix to go back and like start from the beginning for things. So it's just been really interesting to see like the origins of all of these pilots that have now made it into pop culture history, and like specifically the Family Matters one, because Steve Urkel, who is like the guy on that show, is like not even in the first 2 episodes. So it's just really weird to think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's really weird to think that like he didn't even really exist in like the first like ever episode. He just like wasn't there. So yeah, anyway, if you're looking for something kind of a little ridiculous but also wholesome to watch, all the 90s sitcoms are now up on Hulu. Okay, we are going to move into our listener feedback. We have not done a show in 2 weeks, basically, so we have a lot to get through. Once again, if you're looking to get in contact with us, want to talk about anything that we've brought up on this show, a past show, or want to suggest a topic to discuss on a future episode, you can do that in a myriad of ways. For starters, you can always reach us via Twitter. We are at HypeableHype on there. We're also at HypeableHype on Instagram, where we periodically post about the things that we're doing in pop culture. If you want to leave us lengthy comments, there are 2 ways to do that. You can leave them in the show notes on the latest episode's page on hypeable.com in the comment section, or you can shoot us an email. Our email address is hype@hypeable.com, and we try and get through as many as we can every show. I've only pulled a few this week because there are some that I'm sure you guys will want Selena to be here for, so we'll read a bunch more next week, but send in your thoughts, and we do read them, and we respond to everything. If not on the show, then we'll email you back. So yeah, don't be shy. We love hearing from you guys, and we're going to read through some of your thoughts now.
So our first tweet is from Laura Morrow at LauraMorrow123. And she says, Hype, I really did not want to like the new season of Once, but I do. Oh well, I guess I'm here until the bitter end. So looks like she's been sucked in as much as you were, Laura.
I know how she feels. Yeah, no, totally get you. Just fingers crossed it continues to stay that way, but I know exactly where she's coming from. Next bit of feedback comes from Shauna Evans, who's NickLove128 on Twitter. And she says, book rec, The Great American Whatever by Tim Federle. Got it by accident and can't put it down. Along the lines of Simon versus High School, also, I feel the same way that you ladies do about Avatar. But the new ride in Disney World, it's absolutely amazing. Quadruple exclamation points. I have not been there because unfortunately I do not live near there, so I have not experienced the ride. Have you guys done any of that?
I haven't been to Disney World in so long. I'm curious though.
I've never even seen Avatar and I'm very excited to be there. It looks amazing.
I was at Disneyland though last week and I went on the Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout, which is what they replaced Hollywood Tower of Terror with out here. And I didn't want to like it because there's a special place in my heart for Hollywood Tower of Terror, but I really liked the Guardians ride. So if you happen to be out in Southern California, definitely worth getting on that one.
Okay, good. That's good to hear. I rode Tower of Terror for the first time earlier this year because I'd always been too scared before, and I'm like, this is the best ride ever.
I love that it's still out in Orlando though, so that makes me happy. It's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have another tweet here from Miel Snickety, whose really awesome Halloween name is Demiel Gorgon. I like that. This is for me and Marima, because Marima and I actually saw each other earlier this month, and he said, please tell me you two recorded a clip for Marima to be on next episode of Hype. Also, I hope you had a lovely time. We had an amazing few hours in San Francisco, and we did record something, and at some point I will put it up, and hopefully it makes you guys happy. Not ready for this week, though, unfortunately. And then we have another tweet here from Chanel, who says, I agree with Selena that sometimes 3D can be annoying in movies, but another where it worked really well for me was Life of Pi. How do you guys feel about 3D? Are you, like, fans or not so much?
Generally not. I think I don't hate it. Like, some people can't watch 3D movies. I just find it generally adds nothing to the experience. But I agree with Chanel that in certain cases, it does really help. I don't remember if I saw Life of Pi in 3D or not, so that might not be one of them. But yeah, generally no, but sometimes it can be good.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there, too. I did not see Life of Pi. I know we mentioned Avatar originally. I feel a movie like that, it works very well in. When it has something of a, like a cartoon base to it or a Pixar-y kind of base to it. But I'm not a real fan when it's live action at all.
All right. And then we have one email this week. And I thought this would be good to read because it'd be fun to get Kendra and Laura's recommendations for this. So this is from Amy, who says, hello girls, unfortunately my baby boy, he was a cat named Sylvester for clarification, passed away on Friday, and I've been totally grief stricken all weekend. I was wondering what you guys would recommend as far as comfort media and books, TV shows, movies, etc. that may have helped you through a difficult time or specifically a loss. People keep recommending music for me to listen to, but I'm just not a music person. Thank you in advance. I love the podcast so much, and keep up the great work, Amy. Well, Amy, I'm so sorry that your cat died. That makes me really sad, but hopefully you're faring as well as can be expected. Do you guys have anything that you kind of go to for comfort in terms of like pop culture and things like that?
For me, it's either something that'll make me laugh. So comedies that I turn to sometimes are like The Office, The Mindy Project, or like How I Met Your Mother are all really good just to keep you laughing, or like Friends, or either that, or when you're sad and you're kind of, your mind is elsewhere, you don't want to focus on something that needs too much of your attention because you don't really have all of it to give. So if I don't want to watch something that makes me laugh, I'll just watch something that I've loved before, like a show that I've watched before, because then they're kind of like your friends, you know, those characters. So for me, I would turn on like Gossip Girl or Veronica Mars, or now even like Riverdale, because that's kind of along the same line. So either something that'll make you laugh or something that kind of feels like home to you.
Yeah, I would go at it from sort of the escapist kind of thing. Like, everybody works at it differently. I might recommend something kind of like Torchwood, which is just the first season, no other season, because other than that, it's a little depressing. But the first season is just so sci-fi, camp, and ridiculous. There are episodes in there that just make me laugh out loud because it is so completely dumb and ridiculous. In particular, the Gwen wedding episode. Like, I just play that and I laugh. It's hysterical. So it's a good one to do if you're not a Doctor Who person. It's totally fine. You can watch Torchwood without knowing anything about Doctor Who. So I feel it's a really good kind of check your brain at the door, hilarity, sci-fi kind of thing. That might not be a bad idea if you want to go that route. Or the second route, if you want to invest in a really good story and romance and drama, Outlander is a really good recommendation I would have. I think it's a great story to get sucked into if you want a really good romance meets time travel. If that's your thing, go for that.
So yeah, hopefully, Amy, some of those have helped you out, and hopefully you're feeling a little bit better despite your loss. And thank you to everybody who's written in over the past few weeks. We will be getting to your emails and your comments very, very soon. Once again, if you do want to reach out and talk to us about something that you'd like to hear us discuss on a future episode, you can do that in many, many ways. You can tweet us at Hypeable Hype. You can leave us comments in the show notes on Hypeable.com. And our email address one more time is hype@hypeable.com. Please don't be shy. We don't bite. Write in and let us know what you're thinking. Thank you, ladies, for coming on and filling in for Selena. I had so much fun chatting about the news with you.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks for having us.
Totally. We'll have to have you guys on soon because I feel like there's a lot of stuff coming down the pipeline that you guys are both experts and big fans on and stuff like that. So it's always great to get hypeable people on whenever we can. Yeah, I guess that's it for this week, but we'll see you guys next week for another episode. My name is Pamela.
I'm Kendra.
And I'm Laura.
And we'll see you guys very soon for episode 165. Bye, guys.